It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Old empty buildings are a blight on the landscape and a liability for the communities they're part of. Finding a way to repurpose an old building can breathe new life, not just into that building, but into a neighborhood and even a town. This hour, we'll talk about repurposing old buildings, and we'd love to hear about your favorite repurposed old buildings around the state of Iowa. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. Or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we're going to start the hour in Seymour, Iowa, down south in Wayne County, where some serious creativity was born out of necessity when a tornado severely damaged the local K-12 school in March. Caleb Hausch is the mayor of Seymour, and he is with us on the line. Mayor Hausch, hello.
How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Now, just remind us, the school was terribly damaged, and kids couldn't go to school in Seymour. So how did the idea of using the old nursing home come about?
Well, the tornado hit on a Monday night, and the next day was Tuesday. We were kind of in full cleanup mode, and the school was starting to focus on what their options were going to be. The Seymour Industrial Development Corporation happened to just we had just obtained the care center in the last probably 6 months, and we thought that might be a viable option. So we had a big meeting down there and kind of went through the halls and checked everything out. And the insurance company was there. And by 2 o'clock that next day, we were knocking walls down, and we had started to refurbish the building.
That's amazing. How long did it take you to get it ready for students?
It took 3 weeks working 7 days a week. We had to knock some walls out. You know, a care center building, the care center rooms are really small. Mm-hmm. So we just knocked walls out in between two rooms to open it up for a classroom. We had some kitchen issues. We had to get a new range hood and a new Ansel system. Fortunately, the sprinkler system was brand new. The roof was brand new. Then we had to order new doors and windows. So it just took some time to get everything here. And we had, I can't tell you how many volunteer hours were spent on that. I know the day we put the windows in, we had 12 different contractors and their crews there to put in the 36 windows. So it was just it was a really neat thing to see kind of come together. You know, everybody was working towards that common goal, and it went together relatively quickly.
That really is incredible. How have students responded to being in this new space?
So far, so good. it's a little cramped quarters at times. The rooms aren't as big as they used to be, but I haven't heard any complaints at all.
Now, you don't have a gym, right?
No, we do not have a gym. We have a. There's another old building that was a manufacturing facility. It used to be Neely's Manufacturing. It had closed down about a year ago. And on the back side of that, it's a 33,000 square foot facility. And on the back side, there's an 80 by 80 room that's got 20 foot ceilings in it. So we worked all weekend to get it ready to go. And they're going to start PE classes there today.
Wow.
And we've got our high jump pit and some things in there for the track. And then we've got some baseball and softball activities going in there as well.
And how close is that to the nursing home?
It's on the other side of town, but Seymour's only about a mile and a half from what, you know, across town. So
well,
it's
that sounds like track
away.
Practice right there.
Yeah, they could just run over there.
So what?
It's funny you say that though, because they have been practicing track on Lee Street. It's a newly asphalted street, and we can't use our track right now. So they have been using the streets for track.
Nice. So what does the future hold for this facility, for the old school? What is the plan?
Nothing's really been finalized yet. I think right now they're trying to get a total cost of repair on what I'm going to say our old school. And then we passed a bond issue last fall to remodel at that school. So we've got that money sitting out there. And I think they're exploring all their options, rebuild completely versus remodel. And those numbers just haven't really came in yet for them to make a solid long-term decision. And as far as the current school, the old care center building, we are trying to get a assisted living facility or some sort of a healthcare facility in there. And we had talked to a couple people, and we just kind of put those plans on hold while we get to school. And whether it be 6 months or a year or 18 months, however long they need to be in there, that they can be in there. And then after that, we'll go back to exploring our options for that building.
How many students are in the school right now?
Approximately 300.
And this is K through 12, including a preschool as well?
Yeah, yep, it's actually, there's a 3-year-old and 4-year-old preschool.
All right, and you've got kids in school
there. I do. I've got a 4-year-old in preschool, and I've got a first grader.
Well, that's exciting. And for such a small town, to keep your school district intact is a challenge these days anyway. Did you feel like the school district itself was in danger after the school was damaged?
No, I don't really think it was. Our school board, principal, superintendent have done a great job of keeping us financially in a very good place. And there was a slight concern, but we wanted to keep the kids in school. And once we all decided that the care center was where they were going to be and they were going to stay in Seymour, then I don't have any concerns about that at all.
This school year, does it have to go 3 weeks longer?
They are getting out May 31st, and I can't tell you off the top of my head when they were supposed to have gotten out. I think that the 19th, I think, was supposed to be the last day. So they're going to go another week and a half, I think, is about what it is.
That's not too bad. Not bad at all.
Nope.
Well, Mayor Hausch, thank you so much for talking with us today. Well,
thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Caleb Hausch is the mayor of Seymour, where they had to do some emergency repurposing of an empty older building, turning an old care facility, a nursing home, into a school. And this hour, we're going to talk about repurposing old buildings in communities all around the state of Iowa. Again, we'd love to hear your stories at 866-780-9100. And Michael Wagler is with us. He is state coordinator for Main Street, Iowa. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Charity. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And there are so many old buildings around the state, and we're going to talk about some schools and churches and other old buildings that have been repurposed. But how long have we been seeing a trend in smaller communities in Iowa trying to redevelop these old empty properties for new purposes?
Well, I think the trend for adaptive use has been part of Iowa's culture of stewardship for the history of Iowa. But I think overall, when we look at downtown revitalization and really the creativity of adaptive use, I think over the last couple decades, you're starting to see the trends really change towards using our infrastructure in a more appropriate way, using our built environment in a more appropriate way. And I think that's really built on the revitalization and placemaking efforts that we're seeing successful right now.
And was there a moment when things kind of changed policy-wise in Iowa where it became a little easier to renovate old spaces?
Well, I think in the state of Iowa, you know, you look into the late 90s, you look into right around the turn of the 2000 timeframe, you started to look at incentives being created, like the Historic Tax Credit Program in the state of Iowa, that started to change how we look at development and how we look at development working from a financial standpoint. It also started to change the mindset of looking at how we reinvest from a private investment standpoint. So I would say the early 2000s really started to change from an Iowa perspective of utilizing that creativity more.
And looking around the state of Iowa, what are the common buildings that are left empty and left empty for a long time?
Well, I think the ones we hear most often are the schools, whether it be from the consolidation, whether it be from the necessity that we heard from Seymour of just looking at different ways of using that. So we hear a lot about schools as large white elephant spaces that are challenging. Churches, you're seeing some of the same consolidation that have happening in different denominations. But what we work with Main Street Iowa, the bread and butter, is the traditional Main Street building in a downtown setting that's, you know, 25 foot wide, 80 foot deep, that used to have housing on the upper floor and commercial on the first floor, and it's changed over the course of time, and you're starting to see that be a very common scene in community after Iowa of those vacant spaces in downtown.
Absolutely. We've seen a lot of little downtowns kind of hollow out. And in repurposing those buildings, what kinds of creative uses are you seeing?
Well, I think that's the great thing about, especially when you look at a historic building of any nature. You know, right now, when a McDonald's is built or a fast food place is built, it's built for it's built to be a fast food restaurant. But when a restaurant was built in a downtown setting 150 years ago, it really becomes a blank slate of the creativity of how you want to use that space. So you're seeing small businesses develop in it. You're seeing residential pop up in very creative places that really starts to define a community on that. One of my favorite challenges and opportunities to look at is the vacant historic schools across the state, because it truly becomes a landmark opportunity for a community to change how it sees its future, how it sees the utilization of its community in the future. So I think it's just the opportunity of that blank slate that really creates a lot of excitement and energy.
Can you give me an example of one or two of your favorite properties that have been redeveloped in Iowa?
Well, I think when we look at the schools, the city of Mount Pleasant has utilized a beautiful Art Deco high school just off of downtown. They converted the gym space into the library. They converted the auditorium into a public use space and community center. And now they've moved City Hall into it.
So
it's really become a civic center. And what's really great about it, when you talk to the residents of Mount Pleasant, many of them went to high school there, went to school there, went to sporting events there. So it's this piece of their history and their character that's now being reused and re-experienced in different ways. So you have a new generation of people that are going, my kids and the kids of that generation are starting to go to that same building for a very similar use, but they're using that same pride. It's sparking conversation. It's sparking collaboration communities. And I think it really gives the community permission to look at these buildings that were maybe built for one use and start to say, there's another way that we could use this, much like the nursing home or the manufacturing building in Seymour that Mayor Hausch talked about.
So the city hall moving into an old school, did that leave an old city hall sitting there?
It did create an opportunity. They have a great city hall building that was just not, it's not built for the modern use that they have. The city's currently working with developers to look at converting that space to housing. So here again, they look at a building that was built for city hall. Its pediment has city hall in it in a stone. But they're looking at how to use that space to fit the new Mount Pleasant, because now Mount Pleasant is different now than it was 50 years ago, 100 years ago.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about repurposing old buildings. And with me, Michael Wagler. He is state coordinator for Main Street, Iowa. We're going to talk with a lot of other people who've been involved with some really interesting projects around the state. We'd also love to hear about your favorite repurposed building in Iowa. Give us a call, 866-780-9. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about repurposing old buildings and how that can breathe new life, not into just that building, but into a neighborhood, into a community. You're welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me right now, Michael Wagler. He's state coordinator for Main Street, Iowa. And on the phone is Jenny in Perry. Hello. Oh, we can't take that call right now. We just lost Jenny in Perry. Hopefully she'll give us a call back. 866-780-9100. And I want to bring somebody else into the conversation right now. We've been talking a lot about school buildings being left vacant. They can be beautiful buildings, interesting, historic, difficult to renovate. Sam Erickson is here with us now. She is chief operating officer of Community Housing Initiatives, and they've turned a number of old schools into apartment buildings around the state. Hello, Sam.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Now, tell me a little bit about one of the projects that you've done recently. Maybe we should start with the projects in Oskaloosa, where you've been working on turning old schools into residential units. I know you've done both the elementary school and the high school.
Actually, it was two elementary schools.
Oh, two elementary schools.
Yes.
Okay.
What happened in Oskaloosa, those were our first two school renovations. And what happened is they actually had three elementaries. They built a new elementary to consolidate those three facilities, which, of course, left three buildings vacant. One of those buildings had a use, another use. But two were really amazing, amazing structures. And being familiar with some of our historic preservation work, the city leaders called us and had us tour. And so we got involved.
And tell me what the process is like to turn a school into a modern apartment building.
It's pretty
radical.
It's very involved. The first thing that you do, of course, is determine whether or not the building actually has still has its historic character. And whenever you do any kind of a repurpose and you use historic tax credits or use any of the incentives that are available, you, of course, have to follow the Secretary of the Interior standards for historic rehabilitation. And that, I think people feel as though that puts too many limitations on. It does put limitations on. They're good limitations. Of course, they want you to repurpose things and keep common corridors open and really use the space and at least giving nod to the way that it was originally intended. So those are the first things that you do is the historic evaluation of the structure. And then you look at how you can pull the financing together. When we do an affordable rental project, we have financing sources anywhere from 4 to 10 different financing layering sources to pull that all together and get the money to do it.
And does it turn out to be a good financial investment?
It does. Well, we're a nonprofit, so so our goal, of course, is not necessarily to be a good investment, to be a wonderful investment in the community. What we do know is that schools are in walkable neighborhoods, that they, you know, at the turn of the century were built with materials that and care that we no longer see. You know, you've got a lot of things that were handmade, hand done. So much history and so much emotion from the community tied to these buildings.
Well, and that's one of the really key elements here, isn't it? I mean, we've done shows in the past about consolidation of school districts and how difficult it can be in a small town when the school is closed and you have what used to be the heart of the community, the social center of the community that is no longer there. Now, not all of these schools that you've worked on are in districts that lost their schools, period. I mean, I assume some of them have just built new buildings and had to move out of the old schools. But, I mean, this is really the heart of a community.
Absolutely. It's a symbol of vitality, and it's extremely important anytime. Well, and particularly because schools are generally situated on an entire city block. And so when you drive by a vacant entire city block, that's a sort of a black eye on your community from a perception perspective for people visiting your community. So these are wonderful structures to repurpose. And I will say that, you know, it takes about 2.5 years to get this accomplished, to get everything done. But the best part of my job is opening day, when we always hold a grand opening and invite the community to come in. And that's when people share stories and they touch those blackboards that we've preserved and they run their hands along their walls. And, you know, one lady said, "My husband proposed to me here."
Wow.
So those are great days.
Now, you have actually also seen that some former teachers have wound up moving into these schools, living in their old classrooms?
Correct. We have three.
Three? That's a lot.
In our company's history that have actually, yes, moved into the classroom. One lady in Oskaloosa said, I was showing her apartments, and she said, "I don't want to see apartments. I want to see number 5. And she walked in and said, "I live in 5. That's that's where I taught. That's where I spent my time. That's wow. Where I'll retire.
So obviously she had a special connection to the school and wanted to live in the apartment there. Why do people look at these apartments? I know that a big part of the idea is to create affordable housing, but who's attracted to living in an old school?
You know, I think everyone's attracted now. We just opened up the most recent one in Clinton, Iowa, and that is 16 apartments in the former Roosevelt School, which was the longest school in actively operated school in Iowa. It's from 1888, gorgeous, gorgeous structure. And we're seeing all kinds of young people, engineers, reporters, all kinds of people moving into that. So I like to credit in HGTV, actually. I think, you know, people are watching these shows, they're watching repurposing, they're getting more excited about how beautiful these structures can be and the fact that they're unique. They're not like an apartment, you know, that's sort of a vanilla box. They're very unique and have that character, and people love it. They love to invest in their homes and show them off.
Classrooms into apartments makes a lot of sense, but of course there are a lot of other spaces in schools that are communal spaces, an auditorium, a gymnasium, a cafeteria. How do you repurpose those areas?
Well, a cafeteria can easily be converted into probably two apartments. But when you get into gymnasiums and auditoriums, those are much more tricky. And I'll be honest, auditoriums particularly, we don't have any in the buildings that we've renovated to this point, because it is something that the community, we've looked at a few, and there are a few still on our table, but the community would have to come in and use the auditorium. That's not a space that you can convert. A classroom is about 800 square foot. It turns beautifully into a two-bedroom apartment or even a large one-bedroom apartment. But auditorium and gymnasium spaces really have to maintain their original character. The National Park Service doesn't want you to convert those spaces. So then you bring in a community partner and operate those, which okay, in Oskaloosa, we actually had a gymnasium as an appendage to a historic building. It had been built in the 1950s, and the senior center is now there. So it's attached to our senior housing with a breezeway.
And so the space is still used, although probably not as many basketball games.
I've not seen one yet, but I think serious card games do happen there.
Now, you've worked in schools. What other kinds of buildings have you worked on?
Oh, we've done department stores. We did a Carnegie Library. One of my favorites is in Sioux City, which is actually a Carnegie Library that was done by Edward Tilton. And he was the architect that designed Ellis Island. So Iowa's got some amazing architecture. We have a Louis Sullivan building in Clinton. Louis Sullivan, of course, one of the godfathers of Chicago's iconic architecture style. And that was a former department store. We've done postal annexes and all sorts of buildings. A YMCA in Mason City, where Jesse Owens slept, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. You are going to stay with us. We're talking right now about repurposing old buildings, and we'd love to hear from you, your ideas, your thoughts on buildings that you've seen repurposed. Sam Erickson is Chief Operating Officer of Community Housing Initiatives. They've been turning a lot of old buildings, libraries, schools, into apartment buildings around the state of Iowa. Michael Wagler is here, State Coordinator for Main Street, Iowa. I do want to get to the phones. Jenny is on the line in Perry. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
Thank you so much for calling. And you worked on an old post office renovation, right?
Yes, we did. In Perry, it was our old post office built in 1913. And then the post office decided to move to their new location in 1960. And the school administration office took it over.
So then it ended up being emptied for a while?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. And it went up to bid two or three times, and nobody bid on the building. So Mary Rose Nichols and Colleen Eckhoff and I took a look at the building, and Mary goes, "Let's put a bid on it." And I'm like, "Mary, we don't have any money." And she goes, "Well, what do you want to bid?" I said, "I want to bid $1." Mary says, "Are you kidding me? If somebody bids $5 or $5,000 or $50,000, what do we do?" I go, "Then we don't get the building, Mary." And so we put our dollar in an envelope, and Mary's an artist with words, and she wrote a nice letter as to what we would like to turn that building into. And believe it or not, our dollar bid was accepted.
Wow. So what is the old post office now?
Art, music, event center, social gatherings place.
Wow. So after you bid that dollar, you had a pretty major effort to undertake raising money to be able to do that, right?
Well, what I want to hang my bonnet on is you have three ladies with nothing but a dream. And we had to find a bank that believed in that dream. And so we went from bank to bank, and we did find a banker, Kirk Young in Great Western Bank in Fort Dodge. He saw our building before. He has seen our building after. He's seen our results. We paid him a lot of money. We owe him a lot of money. He's, you know, but it's working. And he believed in our dream, and I believe he's one happy man right now.
Well, that's great. Jenny, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story about the old post office renovation in Perry. Deb is on the line in Tipton. Hi, Deb.
Hi.
Hi. You've also been involved in repurposing an old building. Tell me about your building.
Well, back in 2007, the Tipton Moose Lodge was abandoned. The club had gone bankrupt. And the building went over to possession of a lien holder, a business owner who had loaned the money and they couldn't repay. Then he had tried for several years to sell the building and nobody was interested. I, on the other hand, was doing a special needs daycare in my home that really was not adequately wheelchair accessible. We were limited on the number of children. And I was out looking for a building. And someone said, you know, that old Moose Lodge has been abandoned for a while now. What about that? And it was no longer even a for sale sign on. I had to make calls for a couple weeks just to find out who owned it and can I see it? Because I looked at this building, 5,000 square feet on one level, an acre and a quarter of land, right on the highway near the only Walmart in the county. And I said, perfect. I found the owner. My realtor shared with him my business plan and my dream for this building. I actually really lowballed bid it because I offered about half of what he was asking for. After seeing my business plan, he took it. Then I had to find a bank who would finance this because I am not in the benefit of a nonprofit. We ended up using our family home as collateral. We got a loan. We bought the place with a little bit of money to fix it up, thinking it. Now, I knew the electrical was condemned and we needed to bring the sewer up to code. And, you know, some paint and carpet and stuff. Maybe we can get one classroom open. Unfortunately, the reality was we got into this place. The roof was leaking. It had destroyed the furnace. All the pipes were burst, and we had mold in the walls. And every toilet tank was cracked in half, and the water meter broken. Anyway, it ended up being three times as much repairs as we thought we needed. So we had to go back out, ask the bank for more money, go to rural development and get some low-interest loans, and we got it. We bought it in 2012, opened in October 2014. We opened half the building in 2014. Last year, we opened the other half. We now have five classrooms and wonderful wheelchair accessibility and a capacity of 86 children.
Wow. Well, Deb, thank you so much for sharing that story with us. And Michael, I think it's incredible. Deb's story, Jenny's story, these are stories of individuals who can see something in an old building that no one else seems to be able to see and then make it happen. Is that fairly typical of some of these renovation stories?
Absolutely. And what I love about the tie between those, you heard them all use the word dream. And I think that dream becomes the starting of it. But you also heard the woman from Perry talk about a risk. And it's not always rosy glasses that you come into this great historic space and, you know, it's magically turned into it. It is taking a risk and it is, you know, hitting the streets and talking to people who are willing to invest in that risk. And much like a new startup, business startup would, of really having to pitch that dream and talk about how it's going to be reality and how it's going to make it. But I also want to make the point, too, that we've heard a lot about nostalgia and how historic preservation is bringing back, you know, those feelings and emotions from the past. But this work of adaptive use and historic preservation is really about economic development. It's tying this these existing structures to an economic engine for a local community. And it's integral to everything from, like Sam was talking about, of really working towards the housing ecosystem that is a challenge in every community across the state of Iowa. Also looking at the valuation of these properties. Many of them are undervalued because of the existing use, or they're not on the tax rolls because of current ownership. And it's really putting these properties back on tax rolls, assisting cities, counties, and most importantly, our school districts, which are one of our major beneficiaries of property taxes across the states.
These individuals were also taking an incredible risk, a personal financial risk. I mean, Deb mentioned using her own personal home as collateral. That's pretty scary. I mean, that's a really courageous act. I mean, we've talked about the tax credits that can help, but a lot of people are going out on a limb and going out on their own, Michael.
Absolutely. And I love that word courageous. I often use the word brave. It takes all of those adjectives to really drive that. And relating back to small business, it takes that courage to go out on something that you truly believe that you're good at and something that you truly believe can make a difference. And a lot of times, as you know, sometimes we talk about downtown revitalization as the crazies that are going down and being the urban pioneers and doing things that maybe we won't necessarily do on a market-driven reality, and we push the boundaries and the risks. But it's that idea that that becomes a catalyst to bring other people in. It becomes the catalyst for other people to go, there is something pretty cool about that. And it's the next person down the street saying, you know what, I just saw what they did to their building, and now I think I could do that to my building. And then the next person says, I think I could do that to my building. So then it's that snowball effect that all of a sudden happens in a community that changes the mindset of who it is and the image and brand of who it is from the inside.
And really the health of a community can also
absolutely
be changed. We're going to take another short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, Michael Wegler, State Coordinator for Main Street, Iowa. Sam Erickson, the Chief Operating Officer of Community Housing Initiatives, and nonprofit organization that's been turning old schools and other public buildings into apartment buildings around the state of Iowa. Here's a note from David in Waukee. He says, the wonderful old Carnegie Library building in Osage is now the City Hall. My mother was librarian there for many years. A lot of people sharing their favorite repurposed buildings this hour, and you can do it too. Send us an email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about breathing life into old buildings, repurposing them for new uses. And we'd love to hear about your favorite repurposed buildings around the state of Iowa. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Sam Erickson is with me. She is the Chief Operating Officer of Community Housing Initiatives, a nonprofit that has been turning old schools and other old buildings into apartment complexes. Michael Wegler is here, State Coordinator for Main Street, Iowa. And one of the kinds of buildings that keeps coming up again and again are old churches. They are buildings that are often left vacant. Beautiful spaces, but designed very clearly with one thing in mind. So some creative minds around the state of Iowa have repurposed old churches in some really interesting and beautiful ways. Eric Ashbrenner is here with us. He's one of the co-founders of Studio Reserved in Cedar Rapids, which is in an old church. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, no problem.
Why did you decide that you were going to buy an old empty church?
Well, last summer we were looking around. We were previously located in the Cherry Building in Cedar Rapids, which is another neat historic old building. And we really liked the vibe down there, but we wanted to grow a little bit, move into something bigger. And as we started looking around, I saw a listing for an old church, and I said to one of my business partners, I said, wow, that looks like a great idea. It's kind of an all-in-one. We can have weddings, receptions, pictures, everything all in the same space. And I was kind of joking, but it turned into a real deal where we decided to go look at it. And then once we walked in, it was just a really a beautiful old building. It's was originally the First Baptist Church, their first building in Cedar Rapids, built in 1917. And their congregation moved out in 1989. And so it's been a few other businesses since then. Anything from a piano reseller, there was an antique shop downstairs. Lots of different things have been in that space, but it's been off and on vacant since then. And with a little bit of renovation last fall, we moved in and turned it into our photo studio space and kind of a community art space. We also share with a seamstress who Odd Blonde Duck Sewing Studio does some really neat costume creations and alterations and stuff like that.
Well, and I've seen some photos from your photo studio. It's an incredibly beautiful space with stained glass windows and a lot of light in the environment. Really a natural space, it seems like, for a photo studio, but that took a creative mind to be able to see that.
Yeah, and it's one of those things it's the photographers out there always talk about, oh, great, the morning light, the golden hour, and things like that. And of course, it was a nice, bright, sunny day when we walked in to look at it. And I'm like, wow, this is just like warm light in here all day long. So you could have bad weather outside, but we can always shoot inside. And of course, all the stained glass windows and old woodwork and stuff like that. It's just a really neat old building.
What are some of the main challenges of working in this space for you? I mean, an old church, that's quite a lot of space.
Yeah, it's very large, over 7,000 square feet, and that's actually about seven times what we were doing before. So when we moved all of our belongings from the old studio space, we kind of got in there. Well, it kind of looks like we just unpacked a closet. So we have a lot of space to work with now.
Right. So is that challenging? I mean, a lot of space can be really great, but also you have to keep it clean. You have to keep everything running. And that's a lot of space to work on that way.
Yep, there's a lot of positives and negatives to go with it. Now we have so much space, and with a large area like that, we can, you know, there's no really height limits, so we can build sets and have portable walls and things that we move around to make the space look like whatever we need. There's right now we have one corner of the space that's decorated to sort of look like an old garage or an old barn, and when you're shooting photos in that area, you can't tell that you're in an old church building. So it just, the amount of space has helped us to be creative like that and kind of make different areas look like our own. Another area in there right now sort of looks like an old study in a library or like an old mansion or something like that, where we've put an old fireplace and some vintage books and things like that. And I don't know, it's so much more space to work with now that it's kind of really good for creatives, I'll say that way.
And are you looking for more roommates? You said you have a seamstress working in there right now. I would guess you have more room available.
Yeah, we currently share space among four of us, and we do have rentals and stuff like that. We have people that come in, can't afford their own studio space and stuff like that, and we say, you know, get in touch with us through our Facebook page and all that, and you can come in and have this big, beautiful space to yourself for an afternoon and without the challenge of starting your own studio.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Yeah, no problem.
Eric Ashbrenner is one of the co-founders of Studio Reserved in Cedar Rapids, repurposing a beautiful old church as a photography studio and an artistic space for a number of different people. And I want to talk about another old church in the state of Iowa now. Leanne Jacobson is with us on the line. She is the proprietor of the Bear Coffee House and Wine Bar at Gary's on the River in Spencer, Iowa. And this is a beautiful old church that has become a real destination for a lot of people, but it took a lot of work to make it what it is today. Hello, Leanne.
Good morning, Charity.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And tell me a little bit of the backstory of this church, because this church wasn't originally sitting on the river, right?
It's had quite a journey in its 120 years. Yeah, the church that now houses Gary's on the River was formerly St. Stephen's Episcopalian Church. It was built in 1898 on the east side of Spencer in a quiet little neighborhood. My husband, David Jacobson, and his brothers, Ron and Gary, bought the church in 1993 when just 11 people were left in the parish and it needed a new roof. It was a year of rains and floods, and a roof had to happen, which was difficult for 11 people, and so they decided to sell it. Gary, the middle brother, who of the Jacobson boys, had lived for 20 years in Seattle and then Austin, and he came home. He was starting to get sick in 1993 and wanted to be with his family, and his brother showed him the old church with the ship-bottom ceiling and the beautiful stained glass windows, and he loved it immediately and wanted to make it his home and art studio. Unfortunately, he passed away just a year later and was never able to follow through with his dream. But his brothers had shared the vision, and Dave thought the historic building was so too architecturally beautiful to keep as a warehouse, which is what they were using it for. And so he tried to change the city zoning from residential to commercial so they could do something with it that would open it up to the public, but was unable to do so. And so quite a few years later, in 2009, they found a new space for the church and moved it 8 blocks, pulling it down Grand Avenue behind a semi-truck to the banks of the Little Sioux River. And that's where it now rests, on 12-foot-high steel bridge beams that form a lower level, which is surrounded on all sides by glass windows and stone pillars that reach up to the balcony surrounding the old church. And the church is on the upper level. It is now a restaurant that serves really delicious food and barbecue. and it has become a regional landmark after much work. Gary's artwork is displayed on the walls, and it serves as a memorial to his incredible spirit.
Well, and when Gary had this dream of living there and turning it into his studio space, he knew he was terminally ill. He had AIDS, and of course, you never know exactly what the future might hold, but he knew that his days were numbered at that point. Was it his dream that kept his other brothers involved? Because I can imagine it would have been really easy to give up on this space after so many obstacles.
I have heard your previous speakers talking about courage and bravery and vision, and all of those words have been part of our vocabulary and how we would describe Gary's brothers as they built this this memory of him. He was an incredible person, and yes, he did die of AIDS-related complications in 94 at the relatively young age of 41, but he was a man of enormous creative talent and artistic genius, and he was just such an extraordinary human being that his memory has kept the fight alive, you know, as we've worked over the past 7 years to keep the restaurant open and developing, and, you know, a tremendous community of support among area residents has also, you know, kept us going. But it is, you know, Gary's, he was a professional illustrator in Seattle for many years. He designed posters for the arts community and then worked for Eddie Bauer and Microsoft and the Frugal Gourmet and taught classes at the University of Washington. But he spent his childhood in Spencer, graduated from Spencer. He couldn't envision a future here in the 70s.
Right.
And so, yeah, we feel his presence every day, and we know he's really enjoying his legacy.
Now, you mentioned the coffee shop, the wine bar in the lower level. Upstairs, the restaurant. There's also a business accelerator on the property?
Yeah, Startup City is on the far end. And I'd mentioned the, like, floor-to-ceiling windows that surround the lower level. And so you can just have full view of the river and the green space, and it's incredible space for creative and creativity, and so it really inspires that sort of entrepreneurial energy needed, and so it works really well for the business accelerator and all the entrepreneurs who are, you know, working to build their businesses.
I hear so many really exciting things coming out of Spencer. Obviously, this is a community with a lot of creative energy, and a lot of different things have happened to really revitalize the town over the last couple of decades. But from your perspective, I mean, Gary's has become a landmark in Spencer. What do you think it's done for the community?
Well, Charity, besides Gary's, one of the things that really drives us is creating a new place that provides something different and interesting for young people, so that when our sons and daughters are looking for, you know, wanting to come home, perhaps they've gone to school, gone and, you know, saw the world and they want to come back. And for those who are here, we really want to bring something interesting and different to the community, a spot to gather and to have fun and to enjoy good and delicious, you know, food, wine, coffee, all those things. But it really was to bring something different to the community. And sometimes we, you know, drive down the road and just close our eyes and try and imagine what would happen if Gary's weren't here. And I think it would be a big hole, you know, in the fabric of the community. So it's provided some new direction and maybe a turning point as we prepare for the 21st century.
Well, Leanne, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much, Charity, for the opportunity.
Leanne Jacobson is the proprietor of the Bear Coffee House and Wine Bar at Gary's on the River in Spencer, Iowa, a repurposed old church. We've been talking about repurposed buildings all hour. Still with me, Michael Wagler, State Coordinator for Main Street, Iowa, and Sam Erickson, Chief Operating Officer of Community Housing Initiatives. They've been turning old buildings into apartment complexes. And Sam, something Leanne just said brought us full circle to what you were talking about. I mean, they're all these small communities in Iowa where, you know, maybe the main street has died off. Maybe the young people move away and don't come back. You were talking about how these schools turned into apartment complexes attract young people. I mean, this is part of really building a future for a community, right?
Absolutely. I think it's just taking the signature qualities of your community and showcasing them. And interestingly enough, we have a school that we renovated that's about 10 blocks away from Gary's on the River. So we've also worked in Spencer. But they there are a lot of opportunities, as Michael alluded to earlier, particularly in the upper stories. And you know, these standalone large buildings, we're seeing a lot of momentum there. And I do some work with Main Street also. We're really trying to get momentum into those upper stories. So when you drive down a Main Street at night and you see lights on in those upper stories, that says vitality, and that is appealing to young people. They have perhaps, as Leanne said, gone off to school, gone to other cities and places, and they come back to visit mom and dad, and we want them back in Iowa, these young, creative, energetic, educated people, and offering them fun, creative, funky options, delicious food, great coffee, beautiful vistas. That's part of pulling the young people back here and recreating our communities.
I want to get another phone call in here. Dustin is on the line in Knoxville. Hi, Dustin.
Hi, good morning.
What would you like to talk about?
There in Knoxville, Iowa, there's the former Veterans Hospital with a lot of very beautiful large buildings. And I lived in that area for about 8 years, and it's been closed since, I can't remember when exactly it closed it. My grandfather used to go there. But I didn't know if there was ever any talks of repurposing that. I know there was a lot of outpatient housing facilities and stuff like that. That would probably be great to repurpose for hopefully house retired veterans and stuff like that to help them out.
Well, Dustin, thanks a lot for your call. And Michael, I know that's kind of a tall order to ask about one specific property. Is that one you've heard about?
I'm familiar with the facility, but not the project.
Okay. And I mean, old hospitals, old county homes, things like that, that's something that really does dot the landscape. I can imagine that those would be incredibly challenging projects to take on, but I'm sure that they would also be something that could be turned into something amazing. Are you familiar with any projects in any towns in Iowa where an old hospital has been turned into something new?
There have been, but I think to kind of redirect that question in a little bit different way, what I do think it does, it kind of ties our conversation into a bow of we've talked about some gigantic projects, you know, schools, now the veterans hospitals and different things along these lines that can seem overbearing right from the beginning. And, you know, we've talked about dreaming and we've talked about vision. We've talked about the major investment that it takes. But I think for the last caller, you know, a good piece of advice to start is, you know, have that conversation locally, whether it's at the coffee shop, whether it's at the restaurant, whether it's on the golf course, at church. You know, start to talk about some of these big ideas. Start to generate the excitement. And while we're going to think big and dream big, it's got to be those small actions that start it, and it's those incremental pieces and those incremental activities, whether it's pulling weeds out of a sidewalk or putting up a new awning or putting a chalkboard outside a vacant building and asking people to dream about what could be there and start to generate the conversation. It's these small things that really start to create big actions down the line. So I think I really appreciate his call or his question right at the end.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Michael Wagler, State Coordinator for Main Street, Iowa. And Sam Erickson, thank you.
Thank you so much, Charity.
Sam Erickson is the Chief Operating Officer of Community Housing Initiatives, a nonprofit organization that has turned many old buildings into apartment complexes in communities around the state of Iowa. We've been talking about repurposed old buildings this hour. Thank you so much to everybody who called and shared some of their favorites as well. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Lindsay Moon, Dennis Reese, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins, production assistants from Chelsea Hoy. You can get in touch with us anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.